Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to Connecting Faith. Thanks for being here this afternoon. I'm in for Neil Stavem today. And Ted and I were just kind of talking about parenting. Again, it seems like we have this kind of conversation almost every time that I'm with you.
Yes. Yeah, we are kind of similar in age and stage of life with our kids, I think.
We find ourselves driving around like crazy people, going to many different locations all across the Twin Cities and eating out at Subway a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Or other sandwich places.
On the go, definitely.
We are on the go. Parenting is fun. It's also a little bit stressful. I have a teenager now, so it kind of changes the dimension a little bit of what I say and do and what is said and done to me and for me, I guess, for my kids. And parenting can be challenging, but it's also just brilliantly wonderful. Well, today we're going to talk about parenting and how stressful it can be if you have a child who might have a special need. Some recent studies report that as many as one out of every four families in the U.S. has a child who has a special need of some sort. And given those statistics, you can imagine the stress that a special needs family might be under. My guest for today is Lori Wallen, who, among other things, is mom to two children with special needs. And she hopes to equip parents with what they need to do in order to find joy in the challenge and opportunity of raising children with special needs. Her book is called Get Your Joy Back, Banishing Resentment and Reclaiming Confidence in Your Special Needs Family. Let me tell you a little bit about her, and we will get her on the show to share her perspective. Lori Wallen is a speaker and author of the book Why Your Weirdness is Wonderful, Embrace Your Quirks and Live Your Strengths. She's a certified life coach and has helped people for over 10 years to get unstuck and live powerfully by discovering and developing their strengths, another one of my very favorite subjects. Well, she blogs at LoriWallen.com. She contributes to other blogs as well, including Not Alone, where she shares thoughts on thriving in families with special needs. So, Lori, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. So you talk about your family, and you have several children, actually. Tell me about your family and how you came to write this book.
I have four daughters. One of them is going to be 14 in 2 weeks, and her little sister, biologically her sister, they were both adopted, is 13. So I've got two 13-year-olds right now for the next few weeks.
Oh, you could join the conversation with Ted and I then every day.
Yeah. So we it's a whole new set of special needs to raise teenagers, so
yes.
It's a different layer for us. But so I have those two, and then biologically ours, we have a 10 and a 7-year-old daughter as well, and we have had a long journey. Our oldest daughter demonstrated that she was going to have some really intense special needs early on. We were not fortunate to get her autistic spectrum diagnosis until about 2 years ago. So we were working through on, you know, half the story for a lot of the time. And she's also schizophrenic and has learning disabilities, visual impairment. And then the second one, her biological sister, is she's actually missing about a quarter of her frontal lobe in her brain and has epilepsy and is incontinent. So she's a normal kid with a lot of not normal going on. And then the younger two, you know, we call our third one really normal because she has ADHD. It's just like, that's straightforward for us. But they're wild, and they fight like sisters will, and they love like sisters will, and they are 11-hour days for me to care for. So,
well, a lot of your book deals with not only what the children might be dealing with, but really addresses what parents are dealing with. And you obviously have a real heart for parents who are raising children, all kinds of children, but children specifically with special needs. Tell me a little bit about that and how God really moved in your heart to say, hey, I think maybe he's telling me what I can help other parents with as well.
I think that's one of the biggest gifts that most parents who have kids with disabilities will say is that the community that builds within among the groups of people that they find that God brings into their life, who also are raising kids who are a little more than they expected in lots of ways, that is the best part of it. And that's what makes meaning out of it, is how can we share the things that have been hard, what have we found that works, and how do we be together in the middle of what's nuts, you know, from an outside perspective a lot of times. So I, from the early times with my daughters, was being asked to speak at MOPS groups and women's retreats at my church and that kind of thing, because people saw this is just a different kind of a path. How is God doing this in you? And so I've seen since the beginning of being a parent that that's one of the biggest gifts in raising kids like ours, is to be able to share with other people. And I had gotten to a place, once we got our youngest daughter, she had a lot of psychiatric issues and ended up in a residential psychiatric group home for 20 months, between 8 and 10 years old. And she pushed us to the limit. I felt unraveled. I was wrecked as a mom. There was nothing I could do that would help her. There was no parenting technique, no therapy, no, you know, regional center support, nothing that we were bringing in, and we were doing 20, 30 hours a week on her behalf was helping. And there's a place as a parent where you just feel like this is something's got to give, and it feels like it's me, and I need to find life again, and I need to figure out what God's speaking to me as a person. I've lost myself in this. And when I got to that place is when I started thinking about this book and the idea of engaging God about the things that we're almost going to give up on, that we're almost losing hope about, and can he in flight repair us as parents, and how do we do that soar on wings like eagles thing with God when we are, you know, 10 feet under a pile of soiled laundry and a bunch of therapy appointments. So it was clear to me that sharing was one of the keys to that. So that's how that started.
Well, and your book really kind of gives parents a permission to get off that treadmill of going, going, going and doing, 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 even though you say those things still need to be done and you still need to go to all of those places. You do give parents permission to say, hey, I need some time to refill myself as well.
Oh, yeah. And we have to do it in ways that are non-traditional. Just everything about our families is non-traditional. So how can we expect to get, you know, a full 24-hour Sabbath out of a week? You know, it's going to be a non-traditional Sabbath. It's going to be 5 minutes of Sabbath with our favorite scented candle. It's going to be, you know, 30 seconds of Sabbath doing some deep breathing, learning how to meditate on the word with physiological tools, you know, about meditation. And how do we, like, plan sunshine into our days and take, you know, the kinds of essential oils or whatever we need to take care of ourselves. It's going to be these little Sabbaths that we end up learning how to take so that we can keep going.
You know, I remember when I had my first child and what a strange feeling that was to realize that my life is now forever not mine. And I kind of went into that kicking and screaming. And when you're saying that, what you were just saying about Sabbath, I remember just pounding my hand against the desk and saying, but I want my hour to be in the Word. I want my time in the morning. And my husband saying, well, that ship has sailed. You've got 15 minutes. And I'm just wondering if you went through something similar like that when you realized, okay, I need to change the way I'm viewing the life as it was, my life as it was, and embracing this life as it is now.
Yeah, and it really becomes our get out of the boat, like Peter kind of a moment. It is the, here's what I understand as a believer is part of my health and life and abundance with God. I know that I need time with him. I know that I need to seek him on a regular basis. It looks like this to me right now, but are we willing to step out of that and into what feels like uncertain liquid ground beneath our feet and listen to the Bible for 20 minutes in the car as we're driving the kids around? Are we willing to have worship music be our primary source of fellowship with him for a season when we've got a colicky kid or with a child who's, you know, there was a season where we were in and out of neurology and urology, and I couldn't take my daughter anywhere for a while because of her wetting and soiling issues, and I felt like housebound, and I can't get to Bible studies and church and that kind of thing. And it was a matter of listening to Scripture. It was a matter of letting it wash over me and soak over, and you get out of this structured, I know what it means to relate with God sort of place, and you start to ask God, what does it mean to relate with you? And that's a whole different place. And it brings us to a, it's scary and it's weird and it's exhilarating.
Hmm. I'm talking to Lori Wallen today. She's written a book called Get Your Joy Back, Banishing Resentment and Reclaiming Confidence in Your Special Needs Family. She has some just great personal stories to tell and to share with us today about what it means to be a parent of a special needs child or two and how you can also reclaim your joy. We're going to be back in just a bit to talk more about special needs children and families on Connecting Faith. If you want to grab a copy of Lori's book, or maybe you know someone who would really benefit from it, we do have a couple of copies to give away. Just give us a call at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. And we'll get one of those copies off to you right away. Thanks. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us today. I'm talking with Lori Wallen, who's a mom to four girls, two of them with mental and developmental special needs. She is also a certified life coach, has practiced for over 10 years, and a regular speaker at women's events and retreats all across the country. You can visit her website at loriwallen.com or just go to ours at myfaithradio.com and we'll have a link to her page. Lori, one of the things that I love about reading your book is you just have a great sense of humor, even when you're talking about something that is really painful. Talk about how you began to feel kind of isolated with having to just deal with all of the challenges that existed with these new diagnoses that were coming with both of your daughters.
I think one of the ways that I got the most isolated, the initial thing that a lot of parents go through is just my kid acts different and not everybody understands how to fit that into their paradigm. And so you get a lot of people who love you, who are helping and supporting and giving you books on basic parenting stuff, which you've already been doing for, 2 years and been in counseling for and all that kind of stuff. And you want to say, thank you, thanks for caring, thanks for loving us. But after a while, you just stop talking about it because it's just too tiring. You're just trying to figure out what's going on with your child. And so then you start to shrink back from sort of your, parents of typically developing kids in your community. And then after a while, you're getting into these conversations with teachers and professionals, therapists, and they don't talk to one another. So then you're the only one who knows exactly what's going on with all the symptoms and the management of all the different medications and therapies and practices and seeing these trends that are, this isn't really working. I don't know how to explain this. I don't feel like I'm heard. And a lot of times it's sad, but we're not heard because we don't have the MD or the PhD in whatever the field is. And so then you start to shrink back even from the people who can really help you with the child. And so I felt like it pulled me back to the point where I'm just shaking fists at God because, God, you said we're fearfully and wonderfully made. I see a lot of fearful right now in my daughters, and I need you to show me where that's wonderful. And please, just please show up, And there was a lot of bitterness that had come up for me, and I realized that the aloneness was this thing of resentment that had developed around me almost as a protective wall because I couldn't explain how hard things were. I couldn't convey the challenges that were going on with my daughters. I couldn't convey the length of time and how tiring it was. I had stopped expecting people to love and expecting people to reach into our lives. And there was a point at a retreat where I felt like God broke through that. And as he does in retreats, we go and we listen and sometimes go with crossed arms locked tight across our chest, like, I'm not going to hear this, but maybe someone else I know needs this message. And it was about forgiveness and how God calls us to forgive, 7 times, 70 times. And I did the quick math, and between all the behavioral and mood and soiled laundry and all of the things that I couldn't balance and the misunderstandings and the things that had been hurtful that people had said or done that they didn't mean that way, I thought, that's a joke. We're at 490 in a week. You know, you've got to be kidding. There's got to be a different way. This is not what I call abundance, you know. So then I'm shaking fist at God again, saying, okay, so how do you forgive when it's 490 a week? And he's, you know, gentle and kind with us about how, well, you know, you're human. You're kind of human too. You got issues. So let's work through this. And it changed the way that I started to deal with my resentment for other people, which let me get out of the isolation, start to realize the things that I was receiving as shaming from other people that weren't intended that way. And to go through and deal with the shame and the frustration and the sense of inadequacy in myself let me get the strength to get out there again and to let people into my life to the extent that they could and break down those barriers and forgive in ways that I'd never experienced before. There really, it's a breathing forgiveness. It's not even a, oh, that hurt, you know, I forgive. Oh, that was frustrating, I forgive. Or that didn't turn out like I wanted, I forgive. You know, we can't get this assessment for my daughter for 6 months and she's vomiting because her seizures are so bad, I forgive. You know, and there's, it's not that way. It's kind of, I wake up in the morning and I will let everything go that hurts today, God. And I'll trust you with this. And there's joy in the preemptive forgiveness that goes into the struggles with these kind of kids.
Well, your book is just wonderfully personal, but it, you also interviewed many, many other families. Are you finding that this is a common thread for many of the moms and dads who are in your same situation?
The
isolation, yeah.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing is the isolation because, you know, it says in the Bible that there's nobody understands your pain and the stranger doesn't even get your joy. You know, we can't understand each other's experiences. And they become so acute and so many high frequency that you just there's so many opportunities for isolation and misunderstanding. It can be really dark for a lot of people. And I've gone through this as a small group study now since it came out last year with probably 10 different small groups across the country. And the stories, you know, they're excruciating. They're devastating to know that people are hurting in these ways and they're hurting behind closed doors because they just don't know how to say it anymore. And so that's something that I'm, you know, trying to figure out how can we get these ideas to people, you know, and groups who've gone through the study are talking about how they can, you know, build small groups that are ongoing at the churches to be able to meet the needs and to pursue parents who just, they don't even have the energy to reach out anymore from that place of aloneness. So I'm pleased to hear that that's what's been happening over the last year.
Talk to me a little bit about that word resentment. Did you find as you were writing this book and doing your research that there was any kind of pushback from the mental health community or the spiritual community, like we're not allowed to be resentful?
That's a funny question. I get pushback on my first book and my second book for the principles that are in there. But the thing is, everybody struggles with resentment.
But we're not supposed to talk about it.
Well, no, I don't know that that's
true.
I think what people were more upset at and what I would get emails about are, oh, man, if I knew this was a forgiveness book, I never would have picked it up. It's like, what? All this work to do? And but the truth is we need to travel light in this job with the kids. The issues are heavy, and there's not space for a lot of extra clutter. And, you know, that's always the answer is, yeah, you know, we could pretend like there's no dark emotions. We could pretend that parents like me don't get to a place where they're suicidal because they don't see a way out and they're looking into a lifetime of caring for kids. There won't be an empty nest. There will be an increasingly more challenging nest, and we will grow weaker with age. And this is a reality for a lot of parents. And we have to be able to say, I'm breaking under the weight of this, because if we can't admit the depth of our weakness, then where's God's strength in it? He promises his strength shows up in our weakness. So that's always the answer is, you know, it's uncomfortable to talk about these things. It's painful to look at our own depravity and our own isolation and the things we've done that have brought that on top of our hurt. But you know, Jesus didn't heal the people who were indifferent to him. He healed the people who risked everything to press through a crowd and find him. And that's what we have to do.
So how has your faith changed in even just the last couple of years as things change with each of your children, as they do for anyone who's a parent, but it must especially be true for you? How has your faith changed in what, not necessarily what you believe is true, but how you feel, like you said, when you open up your eyes every morning to kind of get started for the day?
It has become more and more a gift to me. It's scary. It really is scary. I cannot trivialize that the frightening nature of raising a teen who's schizophrenic. When her voices become louder and more prominent in her life, when she's pacing an arc through my house at a furious pace every night to calm herself, you know, I look at that and I think, okay, on the outside, this is terrifying, God. I see 50-year-old man with a ukulele who's insentient to everybody else on the trolley, and I think I might be visiting my daughter that way in 40 years, you know. And I can't let that be what defines my day. So I look for where her inner turmoil is creating beauty, because she's an artist and she draws pictures that are swaying in the way they convey emotion in ways that people who have minds wired differently don't see. And so I try and focus on the things that are extraordinarily beautiful in the ways she's different. And it also is liberating. You know, you start parenting, I don't know if you had this experience, but you know, we begin parenting with this ruler, and it's like, oh, my kid stood up at this time, and my talked at this time, and mine's in this many ballet classes and whatever. And it's just, you know, you get a get-out-of-jail-free card with kids like mine. There's just no, my kid is in this many, you know, my kid plays a cello or whatever. It's just, my kid is tying her shoes in less than 15 minutes now, and I'm super excited about that. And so there is some liberty in the fact that there's not this I think this pernicious competition that can happen, especially between moms, when the kids are way outside of what's expected. And that's joyful, too, in a way.
Mm. Well, although you have your younger two who can get on the measuring stick, right?
They could, except they are, you know, because of their older sisters, and it's an unusual dynamic to have the older two be surpassed in ability and emotional quotient, you know, when your younger ones are in preschool. But it changes the way that they are. And my third, who's really, I mean, honestly, legally my oldest, because we adopted our older two after she was born. So legally, she was our first child, my 10-year-old. And she kind of is. She's kind of our oldest. And she changes things. She sees a need in the house. She, you know, troubleshoots and fixes the sewing machine and makes doll clothes. And she has space, you know, that maybe other friends don't, because we don't make her do certain things. So.
Well, it sounds like you could write a third book that have to do with family dynamics and how they change when you are faced with parenting special needs children. And maybe you can give that birth order book a run for its money.
Good point.
Talking to Lori Wallen today about her book, Get Your Joy Back. We'll be back with Lori after the break. If you're listening today and you want to ask Lori a question, we'd love to let you do so. You can give us a call at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. We'll be right back on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. I'm in for Neil Stavem today, and we're talking about getting our joy back, especially for families who are parenting children who have special needs, the challenges that exist within that, and how faith is challenged, and what an opportunity it is as well to be able to get to know your children in a new and different way. Talking to Lori Wallen today, who's written a book called Get Your Joy Back, Banishing Resentment and Reclaiming Confidence in Your Special Needs Family. And Lori, as a certified life coach, I was just kind of trying to make the connection that you kind of have this gift, a way to get to know what are those unique abilities and what makes you, each of your children, wonderful. Is finding out those gifts and talents a little bit different if you're parenting someone with special needs?
No, I think that actually we have a head start as parents of kids with disabilities, because they, you have to find what they're good at so that they have a life and they can move forward with whatever skills that they have. And it helps the whole family to have a positive culture and not just one that's more reparative or trying to come alongside and scaffold what they can't do. It just is so much more life-giving and energetic to have the forward momentum with things that we're gifted at. So, yeah, I mean, I think we naturally do that with kids with disabilities. We really want to celebrate all the little wins, the little progress and steps. I think it's trickier in more traditional relationships. I think with our spouses, with our friends, with our kids, it's always going to be looking past the things that are frustrating in particular. I think that is maybe the biggest gift we have in terms of finding what's wonderful in people, is to look at the things that make us crazy about that person. Because, yeah, I mean, it seems silly, right? But the things that make us crazy are things that they naturally do regularly, right? So I have a daughter who's a major whiner, just whines a lot. She also cries in ways that are bionic. Her tears like blink out of her eyes into these huge tears that just sit on her cheek forever. But she's so tender, and she sees things before anybody else does. And so by the time she gets to whining, I'll scoop her up and hold her in my lap and say, "What do you see? What have you known?" You know, and she'll tell me about, "Well, I saw that, you know, Nevaeh needed someone to hug her, you know, at the beginning of breakfast, and nobody did. And then she started getting mad, and she starts yelling at Angel, and this happened," and all that. And I thought, you saw that all the way back then. And she gets so stressed from all of these things. And so she's, you know, learning to come up and whisper to me, "She needed a hug just then." You know, she's my little barometer for sensitivity with her sisters. That's my youngest. And she's also, you know, she uses her mouth for all kinds of noises. She sings her way through life as well as whining. And so it's kind of a finding what's the context, what's the way to help people that we love to find the rut that takes them into the positive for what they do naturally all the time.
Well, and you write about your husband and that he was diagnosed with Asperger's as well. How has that changed the way you parent together, or maybe helped you to understand how to parent together?
That honestly has been one of the trickiest things that I have ever faced as an adult. You know, there's a lot of things that play into that. We have to not only be looking for what's wonderful in other people, but we have to be managing and faithful with how to live what God's wired us to be in wonderful ways. And, you know, so the onus is on my husband and I to be responsible for the things in us that could go, we're fearful or wonderful. We need to be on it. And on the days we aren't, it's difficult. It's really, really hard for the family. And it makes parenting hard. It makes relating hard. It's been a long challenge in that regard. And there are days we do it well and days not at all. So it's a work in progress there. And yeah, I mean, I think it brings us back to the idea that as the adults in the situation, we need to be listening close. Where is God leading us with our weird and wonderful? And how can we be what he designed? And then that together can mix with the other adult and parent the kids well.
So parents of kids with special needs have unique pressures on their marriage, some that I'm sure many of us can't understand. How have you made your marriage a priority, even in the midst of caring for your children?
Over time, we did date nights for years, and that was simply to be away from the situation, because honestly, there's no reparative thing that works better than simply quieting the other noise, you know? And so that was always a priority. And, you know, the statistics are pretty intense for families like ours. And, you know, the psychiatrist who works with our daughters said that he doesn't have the hard data, but anecdotally with parents, he's seen 75% of marriages fail, even Christian ones, around parenting like this. It is extraordinarily challenging, and that is why there need to be resources out there and why there need to be small groups and there need to be, you know, marriage, things that specifically work on the marriages of families that are raising kids like this over time, because, you know, we've seen the benefit of people bringing meals for different periods of time to us to help out, but 2 weeks of meals does not a marriage save. And so that is, you know, a hidden need in the church for people to surround couples, because it's pretty devastating for couples.
Well, and you write about, I was chatting with you before the show started, just about the things that people say that can either help or can hurt, even if it's unintentional. What are some things that people could do in order to help families that are struggling with the challenges of raising children who have special needs?
Honestly, the biggest thing is to recall the physiological truth that we all have two eyes, two ears, and one mouth. So there's like a 4-to-1 ratio of observation and taking in what you see and hear, and one of putting out, you know, feedback and such. And people want to make it more of a 1-to-1. They want to observe a moment and feel compelled to say something to encourage or to make it better. And that's just a symptom of the fact that as a culture, I don't believe that we're comfortable with grief. I don't think that we understand what it means to have a lifelong living grief with something that's intense in our families. People who've gone through illnesses, who have their own lifelong illnesses, understand that. But it's not common knowledge. And I don't find in the church that it's common knowledge that people are okay with someone hurting for a long time. And it's not the defining characteristic of who they are. But they're hurting, you know, and so the 4-to-1 principle is huge. Like, watch, listen, and maybe speak. But certainly use your two hands, you know. Think of the proportions. Bring a meal. Come and hold that friend. Listen. It's not our job to heal each other with our words. It's not. God is the word, and he can heal. But so I guess that's my biggest thing.
Do you find that people want to hear from you that things are going well, so that maybe they don't ask because they don't want to hear that things haven't changed and it's still a struggle, like there's not an end?
Oh, sure. Yeah. And that's where, you know, the isolation is tempting for a lifelong friendship, because, you know, I will withhold information from people, and my really good friends, they are like pesky. They text me every day. How are you doing? And I'm thinking, you are saving my life and you don't even know it. You're saving me. And those are the people that you lean into, you know, and not let pride or self-consciousness or the enemy's whispering of how your story doesn't really matter as much as anybody else's, so you don't need to keep talking about it. You know, those are lies that can surround us and isolate us, but there are some people in our lives, and we got to let those people in.
You wrote a great story about a conference and how something that was said really changed you and changed your heart. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how that affected your parenting?
Yeah, that was the 7x70 forgiveness moment we were talking about earlier. I went in there thinking, I'm going to be a good friend and listen to my friend doing a workshop, a breakout session on forgiveness, and she's talking about the Holocaust and that kind of thing. And I think that's really intense and far from where I'm at, so it won't get in my space. And no, definitely got in my space. So, you know, I had to ask God, you know, what gives? What is that you'd give a lifelong situation that requires extraordinary hurt and emotional struggle? And what do I do with all this? You know, like 490, 490, 490, 490, how many times are we going to go through this, you know? And that was where I came up with the idea of this is going to look really different. This is not the boat. In fact, the boat has never really been there. You need to get out on the waves and just walk closer. Can you just walk closer? And the waves are cold and it's dark and you're not quite sure what's under your feet there. But it's better than sitting in a boat full of resentment. And it took me 2 years to hit my head against that and fight with God about that and go through the loss and the wreckage of having my daughter be turned over to the city for, 20 months in a residential psych placement and admit the failure of everything I'd done for the years leading up to that, what the perceived failure, by the way, she's doing great.
Oh, good.
God is amazing. She is getting A's in middle school. When does that happen?
I don't know.
Her, you get out of the boat and you think you're going to drown and then you walk.
Hmm. Well, and my favorite part of that whole story is that Peter gets out. He must have some confidence because he does get out, and then he still has a little bit of confidence. And then he realizes, maybe I'm not as confident as I think that I am. And when he starts to sink, Jesus does reach down and pull him up. And sometimes,
yep.
we hit ourselves over the head for not having the confidence to get out of the boat. But what we don't realize is when we do get up and if we do stumble, he is right there.
Yeah.
It's a good ending. Well, let me take a quick break because we have to, and then we'll come back and I want to hear a little bit more about the status of your children now and really what you're looking forward to in the months and weeks ahead. So we'll be right back on Connecting Faith. Again, we do have a couple of copies of Lori's book and would love to put that in the hands of someone you know who is the parent of a special needs child or more than one. Give us a call at 877-93-FAITH. You can talk to Carissa and she will get that into your hands, or you can certainly just go online at myfaithradio.com and click on Connecting Faith. You can submit your name and contact information that way as well. We'll be right back with Lori Wallen on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us today. I'm talking to Lori Wallen about her book, Get Your Joy Back, Banishing Resentment and Reclaiming Confidence in Your Special Needs Family. Lori has two girls with special needs. And Lori, I'm just going to read a small passage from your book. It says, we can begin to entertain this strange idea of forgiving God when we challenge him like this. You've allowed me to hurt. You've allowed my child to hurt. You could stop it, but you don't, and I don't understand, but I want to see you and see goodness in my life again. I want to be reconciled with you. I want to know you and know I'm not alone in this. So you write very honestly, Lori, about just this need to forgive God and need to have a conversation with him, even though you weren't quite sure at the beginning if that was a conversation that you were allowed to have. Just can you talk a little bit more about that and kind of that inner turmoil that went on within your own heart of needing to forgive God?
Yeah. And, part of it is because I've been on pastoral staff at my church. I'm in ministry. I know theologically the reality that God owes us nothing. He mm-hmm. is indebted to us for nothing. And forgiveness is a debt concept. So we theologically can't forgive God, but we emotionally and relationally end up in a place that's similar to that. And to have relationship, which is what it's all about, we have to manage ruptures that come up between us and God. And they're obviously always on our end because it's our perception and our experience of him versus what is real and what's from his end. But so I've got this massive five-layered dialogue in my head about whether or not I should or shouldn't, mm-hmm. but my heart needed to. And at some point I just needed to say, God, I feel like you messed up. I feel like you just catastrophically wrecked this. And I don't see where you are in this. And I'm sorry that I don't. And I want to be more sorry that I am, but mostly I'm mad. Mm-hmm. you have to get real. And I think that that's where that's where he meets us. You know, that he meets us in these weird conversations like he had with people when he was in ministry on this earth. Like, you know, the dogs even get the crumbs off the table and he knows what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. They're having these strange inside, you know, kind of story conversations. And so he met me in that. And the thing that brought me to a place of peace with God in the process of my kids living a constant no to their full healing, which was the big problem. You know, why do you let someone stay schizophrenic, God? Why do you allow someone to continue to have uncontrolled epileptic seizures? What's the deal? Why some people's kids with brain damage get healed and mine still has a huge hole in her brain? You know, I don't understand the no. And then I felt one day that he said, you know, it was pretty disabling for me to send my child into a human body. It was catastrophically disabling for me to squeeze God into flesh that was dying from the second it was conceived. And I cried with him that day when I realized that, because he knows what it is to have a child who's extraordinarily disabled, but he did it on purpose. He did it to love us. And man, it makes me cry even now, you know, to think about it. He knows what it is to parent a child who's profoundly limited, but he chose that so that he could reach the rest of us. And that is beyond reconciling for things that I don't understand.
Hmm. Lori, there's people listening today who are in that boat who needed to hear that. I firmly believe that as we pray for people who are listening. You know, every day when I'm on my way to work, I'm praying for the people who are listening, and someone just needed to hear that. So thank you so much for sharing that. Just that raw emotion of feeling like there's nowhere to go and communicating that to God. And I just thank you for that. Thanks.
Aww.
As people are reading this book, you know, you kind of mention in your next steps saying, hey, you've gotten to this point, now you can do something with it. What do you recommend that people take part in, whether it's communicating with other people or taking that next step? What do you recommend for people who've read, who have reached out and need to learn more about how they can function?
There's a lot of different ways. I think it starts with a self-assessment. Where is the biggest need right now? You know, is it that you have no breathing space during your day? Do you need to set a timer on your phone every 60 minutes and take a 30-second deep breath? Or a break with that favorite lotion that makes your heart happy to smell it, you know? Do you need to do physical Sabbath stuff for yourself? Are you at that level? You know, take a look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs. It is a pyramid, and most of us raising kids with special needs live in the bottom two tiers of personal safety and not having our needs met. We're hungry half the time and don't even pay attention until dinner time. We haven't used the bathroom in 4 hours because we're dealing with everything that's going on around it. You know, listen to the body. God gave you a body, and it's going to pass out if it's not cared for. So take care of basic needs. Get on a routine. Get that extra 20 minutes of sleep if you can, you know, that kind of a thing. That's the next step for real. And then there's also reach out to somebody. Let the next person who asks you how you're doing, let them hear what's going on, whether they can handle it or not. They're the one who asked. They're grown-ups. They can take it, you know, and let people in as you can, you know, as you've given, not the unsafe ones who've been unkind or not get it at all, but the ones who've tried, you know, let those people in, let that emotional quotient start to grow and that fill up in our lives, you know, start a group, start a partnership, you know, get together on the phone if you can't make schedules connect, which is hard with all the therapies and things for our kids. Get in a group like there's one on Facebook that was started by the Encourage website called Enable, and it's for moms of kids with special needs. Get on an online forum. Get on a blog. Meet people there. You know, do it on your time scale in the middle of the night or whatever it takes, you know, to find people and fellowship. There are a lot of next steps that can happen, and don't get overwhelmed with them. Take one step, because any step is healing.
Do you find that churches are a little more receptive to the fact that they have many families in their church community that are affected by having children in their families with special needs who might need some assistance, even if it's in the children's ministry?
I do. I find that that's continuing to grow. It is at a sadly inadequate pace. I think that the tragedy is that it takes so long to move things, but there are a lot of churches that are working really hard. I've had interviews with, you know, youth leaders that are trying to put together programs to resource their staff members and help kids, you know, zero to teen be able to be integrated, not just accommodated, but integrated into their faith communities. You know, Johnny Erickson's daughter wrote the foreword for this book, and I went to her conference last year, and every church needs to send a delegate to her conferences, in my opinion, because the vision is not to make a space for a wheelchair or make a space for a kid with autism. It is to equip that individual who's in a wheelchair to minister to God and others. They're a human, you know, that has a calling that's on top of all the things that we need to accommodate physically or mentally, psychologically. You know, I met pastors who were blind and lame and in wheelchairs and missing limbs, and they're pastors. They minister. There is a calling on our kids' lives. And so that is the, you know, that's where we're headed. That's what I want to see churches doing, not just loving and supporting families so that they can attend church. That's meager. That's, you know, get a potato a day for your diet. Like, let's see God reach into the disability community and make lives glow for him, you know? That's what I would love to see.
So as we have to come to a close soon, I'd love if you would just tell people where they can find out more information about you and the other things you write about so that they could check in on you.
Yeah, I've pulled in a little because I do have teens now who are in this mental health world. So I only write for two sites right now, godsizeddreams.com and then LoriWallen.com. And I'm even taking a bit of a break. We just moved house for the first time since I was a parent. So we're getting settled. It's going to be another month or two before I start blogging again. But you can find me there at LoriWallen.com and at LoriWallen author page on Facebook.
Okay. And we'll put a link to that as well on our webpage at myfaithradio.com. You can click on Connecting Faith, find out more about Lori in that way as well. And Lori, as we come to a close, I'm wondering if you would just mind praying for those people who are listening today who somehow found the show. God led them to that show so they could listen. Lots of callers were calling in. And so I'd love to have you pray for them if you would.
Oh, yay. Thank you. I would love to. Oh, Father in heaven, you are good to us, all of your kids who are really limited in what we can do, but you love us and you have an extraordinary compassion over your people. And God, there are people who are hurting, quiet and hurting behind closed doors, and you see them. You see their hearts. You've never lost them. And they know somewhere deep in there that they can reach to you, and I pray that you'd give them the courage to do that today. I pray that you'd give courage to the people listening who know those people, that they would find them and love them well. I pray that you'd resource the pastors who are listening for their churches to minister and surround those families well. I pray a blessing over this radio station for proclaiming truth and surrounding families with what brings them into relationship with you in stronger ways. Lord, will you minister to your hurting ones today? We know you see us. We love you for it. Thank you. In Jesus' name.
Thanks so much, Lori, just for your presence today and for writing a resource and being so transparent in what you're feeling so that others don't feel like they're all alone. Thanks so much for doing that.
It's been a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Anytime. And if you're listening and you want to, maybe you just heard a snippet of that show and you want to hear the rest of that show, you can go to our website at myfaithradio.com and click on Connecting Faith. The podcast of the show will be up in just a couple of hours. You can also check in on Lori at her website, which we will post there as well. Well, join us tomorrow as we talk about understanding the man you love. That's perfect because today is my hubby's birthday. So I'm going to tell him that I planned that one specially for him. Ted, I'm hoping you'll go along with me on that one.
Oh, sure. Okay. Pleasure to collaborate with you. Yes.
Thank you. All right. Well, thanks for listening to Connecting Faith. We'll be back tomorrow with more. Connecting Faith to Life on Faith Radio.